I've often thought that every single romantic relationship is like a country all its own, with its own unique rules, its own unique social mores, and so on. And everybody else is, to some degree or another, an outsider. But whenever we talk about relationships in general, we run into some strange, complicated, and ridiculous things. Hi, I'm Ben.
Hey, Ben. I'm Noel.
Hey,
wow,
Noel.
I'm sorry. I was confused there. Where am I today? It's been one of those. I'm really fond of that expression. I think it's a good way of looking at it because it's sort of like the whole idea of we're all protagonists in our own story, another expression you enjoy.
Thank you. Yeah, I do. I do enjoy it. And I enjoy hanging out on this show, Ridiculous History. That's right? I'm having one of those days, too. That's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing.
We're here for that reason, right?
We are here for that reason.
Oh, great. That means that our super producer, Casey Pegram, is also here. Casey, I'm going to lean back and wave at you.
He really did it.
I got a thumbs up. So the three of us are people who have had our ups and downs in love without getting too personal. Now, we're not incels or anything, but, you know, the course of true love never did run smooth, as other people want to say. And today's episode is about the end of some romantic relationships. It's about the end of marriages, but not in the typical way. Not a marriage that ended in divorce, not a marriage that ended in death. Not even a marriage that ended in annulment. We're talking about something very strange today, and it takes us all the way back to merry old England.
That's right, Ben. Between 1780 and around 1850, there was a pretty fascinating and bizarre practice that gained popularity out of necessity, really, weirdly, in England. It was the practice of selling wives, or wife selling.
Yeah.
And it's not a euphemism for anything. And that's literally what it was.
That's exactly what it sounds like. The BuzzFeed headline would be Englishmen sell their wives. But there's more to the story. And it's not the same kind of perhaps human trafficking or chattel slavery that you might associate with, quote unquote, selling a person. So let's journey back to the 1750s, say. And you're an average household. You're not aristocratic. Maybe you're working class or lower working class, and you run into irreconcilable differences. And you, as maybe both of you, decide amicably that your marriage should end. You should dissolve it. Then you start looking into the process of dissolving your marriage, and you quickly learn some really depressing, difficult stuff.
Yeah, there's depressing stuff on both sides of the equation. For women of this time, one of the most depressing factors was that they had no property rights. They were basically considered, not only did they have no property rights themselves, they themselves were basically considered the property of their husband. And they had no recourse if the husband wanted to annul the marriage. They themselves could not choose to annul the marriage. It was entirely up to the husband to make this decision. Even worse, and this is something that was bad for the husband, it was incredibly expensive because there was no such thing as a divorce. The first divorce didn't even come around until 1857. So the only way to get separated legally was to get a private act of parliament and then have it be blessed by the church. And that private act of parliament did not come cheap.
It did not. And let's step back here for a second, because divorces could occur, but they were something that was essentially relegated to the higher class of people in society at the time. Obtaining a private act of parliament would cost around £3,000. And that cost did not— That cost was essentially a note of exception to Britain's otherwise very, very strict law about divorce. And it still just got you halfway through the game, because if the church didn't want to give their blessing, then you were SOL, straight out of luck, since this is a family show. This was expensive. This took a long time. And people eventually had to find some sort of alternative plan. Also, £3,000 for that act of parliament, that is about, if we run it through the inflation calculator, that's about £15,000. in our modern age.
It's insane.
Yeah, yeah. And that 3,000 pounds is just the bottom, the scraping the bottom, right? It could easily become a higher fee, 3,500 or so.
What factors do you think would have led to any fluctuation in the price?
Nepotism.
Really?
I mean, I think so, yeah. Let's say you're a member of parliament, you're a lord, an aristocrat of some sort, then you have the funding to get this act passed through, but it may have been a quid pro quo thing. It may have been a mutual back-scratching arrangement, right? And so maybe if there wasn't some favor that you could grant in addition to being able to pay this 3,000 pounds, maybe they would up the price and they say, oh, for you, buddy, it's 4,500 or something like that. So there wasn't a strict schedule that decided what people would pay exactly. And this was an annulment, right? The average person could not afford an annulment. And again, as we pointed out, these decisions were primarily made by the dudes at the time. So instead, the husband would do something that sounds very strange and disturbing. He would take his spouse to the local marketplace or even a cattle auction, a livestock auction. Then he would register his wife as property to be sold, and symbolically, a rope would be placed somewhere around her body, right?
Was this just like for the symbolism? Like, I don't understand what the function of this rope was. Is it?
It feels symbolic.
It's so strange.
It feels symbolic. It would be around the person's neck, their waist, or their wrist. And then they would have to go stand up on an auction block while people bid on this human being.
Well, because let's be real. I mean, if anything, maybe correct me if I'm not thinking about this the right way. This is sort of a loophole. They're trying to figure out a semi-legal way of doing this thing, of ridding themselves of this unwanted property.
Yes, yes. Spot on. You're absolutely right. Because at this time, these people might not have any recourse, and maybe both the wife and the husband wish to part ways. They may be cooperating in this regard. This is an illegal practice. It's definitely a loophole. But the authorities, many of whom probably could not afford a divorce themselves, would turn a blind eye to it. It would get ignored the way that some other minor infractions are ignored in society today, like jaywalking, for instance.
Sure.
You're rarely going to get busted for that.
Did you know that the term jaywalking was
a conspiracy?
Yeah. It was trumped up as a term of abuse for pedestrians.
Yep. That's exactly true, because this was during the propagation of automobiles.
Right. Yeah.
We have a Car Stuff episode on it. There's a history of jaywalking.
That's right. I remember that. And there's a really great Adam Ruins Everything episode about just how cars are actually quite terrible and, you know, infrastructure mm-hmm. that's based around driving is really just not very functional at all and yada, yada, yada.
Oh, I've got another one while we're on the tangent. Litter Bug is another hit piece. It was created to take the focus away from the amount of waste that goods manufacturers create and put the focus on people. So it's your job to take care of the waste. Brilliant Machiavellian stuff.
Total bait and switch, or kind of like a sleight of hand kind of move.
Misdirection.
You know? There you go.
Prestidigitation.
Man, you nailed that pronunciation, man. That's a tongue twister.
We practiced that off air.
Thanks
for editing that part out, Casey. But we're right, you know, that this is a loophole. People are turning a blind eye to it, and at times the description of it seems almost jovial, you know, because what did they do after they made this sale?
They drank, probably.
They went to a bar.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a divorce party.
What's interesting about this, though, Ben, is that there's something else going on beneath the surface, because on first glance, this entire charade just seems just, ugh, grossly misogynistic, and of course it is, but there's an aspect that we haven't talked about yet. The woman actually had like a veto vote over who she went with, and she was likely just as ready to get out of this marriage as the husband was to be rid of her, mm-hmm. and this was in a weird way gave her the ability to kind of control her destiny much more than she would in an annulment where she was just, you know, thrown out into the street with no property.
Right, and we have found specific instances, documented occurrences of this happening. It's not a rumor. There's a great article from the Review of Behavioral Economics called Wife Sales by Peter T. Leeson and a few other authors. And they describe, in no uncertain terms, specific situations where this occurs. There was a gentleman named Moses Maggs, who we have a quote from in the course of attempting to sell his wife. And I'm not going to do a voice, but it's written in that way, that kind of condescending way that authors of yesteryear would write whenever they thought someone had a lower class accent. You know, there are a lot of weird apostrophes, a lot of misspelled words, but here it goes. Ladies and gentlemen, I axe laugh to oppose your notice. Her's a good creature and goes pretty well in harness with a little flogging. Her can carry 100 and a half of coals from the pit for 3 good miles. Her can sell it well and put it down her throat in less nor 3 minutes. Now, my lads, roll up and bid spirited. I bought her through the turnpike and paid the mon the toll for her. I brought her with a halter and had her cried. Now, gentlemen, who bids? Goin', 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 I can't delay. As the auctioneer says, I can't dwell on this lot. Come, say 6 shillings.
This is a horse you're talking about, right, Ben?
One would think, Noel, this is Moses Maggs selling his wife. She consented to be sold. When they finished the transaction, she was sold for 6 shillings and 3 gallons of ale.
What was that part, though, about putting her in some sort of harness?
A halter, yeah.
What? I don't understand. You're going to have to help dissect this one for me a little bit, Ben. There's something about coal carrying loads.
It was talking about what that guy saw as the skills of his former spouse.
Jeez Louise.
I know. And there's a bit of a puzzle here, according to these authors, because this sale of someone's spouse resulted in the de facto dissolution of a marriage because the de jure, the legal way, was very, very difficult. But it wasn't the only de facto way to dissolve a marriage. You could have a judicial separation, or you could privately say, look, no one has the time or money for a divorce, but let's just go live separately. You know what I mean? You could do those things.
Sure.
So it's a bit confusing for us to understand how this practice of selling someone in a public space became, I don't know, not commonplace, but became a real thing.
Yeah, and I was trying to kind of get to a point about how this sort of afforded the wife a bit more control than she would have had otherwise by consenting. Like you said, she consented to be sold, even though that got
a bit more agency, at least.
Yeah, a little bit more agency. And in this article from Motherboard by Ben Richmond called Why Wife Selling Was Advantageous for Wives, that cites that same paper by Peter Leeson that you were talking about. And he makes the point that in the records of the nearing around 300 wives that were sold between 1780 and 1850, all signs point to almost every single one of them being consensual, or the wife being all for it.
Yeah, and there's a great part. I'm glad you bring up this article because there's a great part of there where they talk about how the concept of marriage has evolved. You know, in 2019, most of the time when we think of people marrying, at least in the Western world, we think of people marrying because they have genuine affection for one another. They like each other, right? However, that wasn't the case. That's relatively recent. Until about 200 years ago, marriage was thought of as much more of a transactional economic relationship.
Absolutely, know? Yeah.
So Justin E.H. Smith, in an essay for Lapham's Quarterly, has the following quote describing how marriage had been for the bulk of human history. Marriage was, for most of human history, a variety of exchange, one that consolidated social ties between families or clans. And it's sort of like that conversation we've had before about why people had so many more children than they do now.
Sure.
At least in Europe and in the U.S. It's because you would have children as free labor. And then as health insurance when you're elderly, they would take care of you.
Yeah, and if that, what is that, like a Craigslist post sounding ad for that wife that was up for sale is any indication, I think wives were probably treated as slave labor a bit too.
God, it's terrible. Yeah. You know?
But here's the thing. In the Motherboard article, Leeson goes on to point out something that I hadn't even considered. Who are the ones that are in the market for these, as he refers to them, used wives?
Right, or unhappy wives.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So who is it?
It's a couple of different possibilities. It could be folks who have just not, who have been unlucky in love, you know, and just haven't done very well in the traditional kind of marriage marketplace. It could be folks acting on behalf of wealthy individuals mm-hmm. who are just on the lookout for, maybe they're like wealthy, you know, widowers or something like that, looking mm-hmm. for a new wife. Or it could actually be the families of the wives themselves.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Essentially, the economic argument here is that wife sales permitted unhappy women to trade a marriage that they didn't particularly care for with a marriage that they valued more. So this seems like an improvised system that was organically created to get around the laws of the time. It is still, it's always going to be a little bit puzzling because there were other avenues for de facto divorce. But Leeson and his team found that wife sales benefited wives rather than harmed them. And they argue that without this institution, at least some unhappy spouses in Industrial Revolution era England would have remained trapped in inefficient marriages that they wanted to exit. I'm laughing at the phrase inefficient because it's weird to hear economists describe marriage. They weigh in on it in the following perspective. The way that we think of marriage from an economic perspective is to think about how much each of the spouses value being in the marriage relative to one another and relative to living outside the marriage. So it makes sense to me that an economist would look at this from a value-based transactional perspective rather than like the love, the, you know, the romance, the sticking together for the kids, all the things that are so common today, right? It seems that we are in a very privileged position where we have more agency in our own relationships, regardless of who you are and how you identify. The truth of the matter is that you can marry people because you like them now, instead of needing to, you know, end the blood feud between your clans or to get a dowry and so on.
What even is a dowry?
It's the payoff that the bride's family gives to the groom.
So it's just a cash offering, basically.
I think it could be a bartering thing. It could be property. It's brought. Like you agree to marry someone, at least traditionally, and then the bride comes with maybe it's land, right? Maybe it's livestock. Maybe it's just straight up cash.
But, you know, loophole that this thing was, it really started to kind of lose its luster, and husbands who were trying to sell their wives kind of became a little bit looked at as social pariahs, and it just wasn't done. You know what I mean? So the practice kind of went away. But apparently, the Vintage News writes that they found a case as recently as 1913 when a woman said that her husband sold her to one of his work buddies for £1. So that's obviously an outlier, but
yeah,
what an interesting practice. And the whole idea that it was somehow better than the alternative for women. But yeah.
Yeah, so the decline of wife sales largely coincided with the rise of more equal property rights and the ease of getting a legitimate or de jure divorce. Also, the speeches from these people who are attempting to sell their spouses are so strange. For instance, there's one guy in 1832. I just want to list this off. He lists his spouse's bad and good qualities as he saw them. He called her a born serpent and advised prospective buyers to avoid frolicsome women as you would a mad dog, a roaring lion, a loaded pistol, or cholera. Then he listed her assets, which included the ability to milk cows, the ability to sing well, and to be a great drinking companion. And apparently they were still friends afterward, which is, to me, just the strangest thing. And, you know, if you are listening and you are married, or you have been married, or you are engaged, congratulations. I absolutely wish you the best. Please, 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 whatever you do, don't try to sell your spouse. Just don't do it. It's so weird.
It's a bad look.
It's not a good look.
Yeah, no, it's poor form.
It's very poor form. And thankfully, in this day and age, it is illegal.
Yeah, I mean, it was illegal back then, but the authorities seem perfectly willing to turn a blind eye to it. Certainly would not be the case today. I think this would be highly frowned upon, and you probably wouldn't be able to get away with it.
Yeah, so. It's human trafficking.
That's the word, Ben. That's the word.
We hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and as always, we would love to hear some of your takes, your feedback, or your understanding of similar situations if some occurred in your neck of the global woods. You can find us on Instagram, you can find us on Facebook, you can speak with your fellow Ridiculous Historians on our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians.
Yeah, if you want to check out me and my various adventures around town with my weird 10-year-old, you can check me out at Embryonic Insider on Instagram.
And I believe when this episode comes out, I'll either have just returned or be on the way to the DMZ. So if you want to see some pictures of that, follow me on at Ben Bolin at Instagram. Thank you, super producer Casey Pegram. Thanks to our research associate, Eves Jeffcoat, who we really should have on the show at some point.
She's got some really cool stuff brewing.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed the theme. And thanks to you, Ben Bolin, for being a pal in a cohort.
Likewise, Noel, thank you. And luckily, I did not find a comic book that pertained to today's topic that was worth recommending, which I think is a good sign for society overall.
Agreed. See you next time, folks.